Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another really good revision history podcast with me, Mr. Hutchison. And Richard's dead. Richard is dead. So we are moving on to the second of our kings, the second sort of rock star, if you like, of the course, and that is, of course, King John. Now, you can split his reign up into different chunks, really, different events or key events that happened during his time as king. So I'm just going to run through those quickly to give you a sort of overview, and then I'm going to run into the first event of his reign, which is the loss of Normandy, and that will take us to the end of the podcast. So here we go. The first sort of chunk, if you like, the first part of his reign is the loss of Normandy. That's the first sort of story you need to be aware of, okay? And of course, as always on this course, you are judging John's skills, if you like, as a king, whether or not he was a good king, and always thinking about comparing him to Richard's actions, you know, strengths and weaknesses, character, decisions, all the rest of it, okay? After that, you've got John's fallout with the Pope, the interdict and excommunication as well. That leads into the First Barons' War and John falling out with his barons, Magna Carta. And finally, after John's death, you need to know a little bit about how the country was left and what happens directly afterwards, focusing on an important character called William Marshall. So there you go, four sort of chapters, if you like, that you need to be aware. And it's also important to realise that some of them are linked. So, you know, when John falls out with his barons, that's as a direct result of what's happened before, including the loss of Normandy and including his fallout with the Pope. So here we go. I'm going to start with what happens when he becomes king. So obviously Richard dies fighting a war which has, you know, very little to do with his struggle with Philip II. After the country's raised this humongous ransom, 100,000 marks, 2 billion in today's money, twice the yearly income of England, he throws his life away a little bit later, pardon me, fighting on the continent, which leaves his heir, King John, or Prince John, to become king. And when John becomes king, what you've got to remember is that he inherits an empire nearly as big as Richard and his father Henry II. So in terms of geography, the Angevin Empire is pretty much intact. It's the same as it was, you know, during Henry II's time. So when John becomes king in 1199, he inherits a kingdom that's the same as Richard and Henry's. By the time he dies, the country's in total disarray. French are invading, Normandy's gone, it's in absolute dire straits, okay? So just bear that in mind as we're judging John's sort of actions as king. Now, when he comes to the throne, however, as bad as that sounds, we need to judge him fairly. He does face quite a few problems that perhaps Richard didn't have. So you need to keep that in mind. And some of these problems were as a direct result of Richard's actions during his reign. So you need to bear that in mind when you are, as I say, when you're judging John. So he had sort of four key problems, really. The first one is the barons. You've got to bear in mind that the barons had recently been taxed heavily twice by Richard, including all the normal taxes, all the normal taxes that kings ask for. So you've got the feudal incidents, inheritance tax, all the rest of it, okay, all the usual stuff that I went through in a previous podcast. But on top of that, of course, he levies the Saladin tithe and then his ransom. So the country is bankrupt. But beyond that, the English barons themselves don't want any more war because it costs money. Richard's ransom had cost the barons dearly, and so they were wary of this. They were sick of it by the time John comes to the throne. So there's no money, okay, in England. The country's effectively bankrupt. But the English barons are less open to the idea of paying any more money than they were in Richard's reign. They feel they've had enough. So he's got that problem. The other thing to remember is Richard threw money at warfare. And part of that was allies. So being allied with other countries is important, just like it is today, to keep your country safe. And in order to secure alliances with countries abroad, Richard paid the money to keep their support. So when John comes to the throne, those same allies expect the same payment, but of course John no longer has any money to pay them. Possibly the biggest problem he faces is a challenge to his crown. Now, Richard doesn't have that when he comes to power. But by the time John does, there's somebody else waiting in the wings, somebody else to challenge for his throne. And that is somebody by the name of Arthur. Okay, so Arthur is John's nephew. Arthur is the son of Richard and John's older brother, Geoffrey. Now, we don't learn too much about Geoffrey because he dies before Henry II and therefore never becomes king. But when he dies, his wife is pregnant with Arthur. So when Richard comes to the throne, Arthur isn't an issue because Arthur is literally a baby. Okay? And so a baby isn't going to challenge for the throne. But after that, when John becomes king, Arthur's a teenager. And in medieval times, when you're a teenager, you're a man, you can lead an army. Okay? And bear in mind, in medieval times, it wasn't clear who should inherit the throne. It wasn't till later on that the idea of the primogeniture came into force. A primogeniture is the idea that when a king dies, it sort of automatically, succession automatically goes to the firstborn child. That wasn't the state. That wasn't the way things were done in 1189, 1199. Okay? The king named his heir. And when a king didn't name an heir, it caused major problems because you've got power vacuum and everybody competes for the throne. It's exactly what happened in 1066. You've got three people claiming that they were promised the throne, okay? Which is why you have the Battle of Hastings and everything else, which eventually, of course, leads to the Angevin Empire. So it's all linked. But anyway, Richard does leave an heir. He names John as his heir. But despite that, some people think it should have been Arthur because Arthur is the son of the older son of Henry II. So some of the barons, particularly those in Brittany and France, believed Arthur was the rightful king. So there's a little bit of a potential challenge there to the throne that John's got to deal with that Richard didn't have. In 1200, so not long after John comes to the throne, he's got an immediate problem to deal with. You'll remember, whilst Richard was away on crusade, on the fighting the Third Crusade, and whilst he was in captivity before his ransom, John had turned traitor against his brother Richard and allied with Philip II to attack the Angevin Empire and England. And John had actually taken castles there and Philip had started attacking the lands in France. John, of course, turned sides again and apologised to Richard when Richard did return and was forgiven and made Richard's heir, amazingly. But Philip II continued to attack the lands in France. Of course, John is now king by 1200. So Philip, John's old ally, is now attacking his lands. They were Richard's, now they're his lands. So he's got to put a stop to this, okay? So that happens in 1200, the year 1200, during the Treaty of Ligouley, okay? That's the first agreement between John and Philip. And basically, it was an agreement between the two sides to stop the fighting. All right, to stop the fighting. So they signed an agreement together, and here are the basic terms. Effectively, Philip recognised John as Richard's heir. So Philip is recognising that John is the rightful king of England. That's really important, folks, because you have got this other guy, Arthur, knocking around now as well. And if Philip backed him for the throne, that could be a real problem. So Philip formally recognised John as Richard's heir. Arthur himself was allowed to live, and he was allowed to keep his lands in Brittany, which is in the Angevin Empire in France, okay? And he must also pay homage to John and acknowledge that John is his feudal lord, okay? John paid homage to Philip, however. This gets a little bit complicated, but it's so important because it has ramifications and consequences later on. So John pays homage to Philip for his lands in France. So for his lands in France, John is Philip's vassal, okay? So not for the lands in England, not for the whole kingdom. John is still king of England. Philip is still king of France. But for the Angevin lands in what is now France, John basically sort of acknowledges that he's second in command for those lands in France, okay? So John pays homage to Philip and becomes his vassal for the Angevin lands in France. And that's very important, folks, because that comes up in a moment. They're about to fall out. Okay? So here we go. We've got to judge Richard and John by their actions. We have to judge whether or not they were good kings. You could argue that one of John's first actions is a mistake. Also in the year 1200, John marries. He marries somebody by the name of Isabella of Angoulême, okay, who has some important lands and will provide him with some allies. So it's a political marriage. He marries Isabel of Angoulême. She was a powerful heiress to lands that John wanted control of. And that's absolutely fine. That was very normal. That was the done thing in medieval times. The problem was that Isabel of Angoulême was previously promised or betrothed to someone else, a man by the name of Hugh de Lusignan, who was an important baron of Philip's. So when John effectively, I suppose, steals Isabella off Hugh, he runs to Philip and complains, as you could imagine. Now, the problem is that John is Philip's vassal for the lands in France, which gives Philip an excuse to continue his war against him. Okay, you can't just attack other Christian kingdoms if you're a Christian king in medieval times, because the Pope won't allow it. The Pope's got quite a bit of power to excommunicate, to place you under interdict, all things we're going to look at later because they happened to John. But the Pope didn't want Christians fighting each other. He wanted you, if you're a Christian king, to take your army and go across to Jerusalem and fight to get Jerusalem back. So if you were going to fight other Christians, you had to have a sort of legal excuse. And because John has wronged a key baron of Philip's, it gave Philip the excuse, because John is also a vassal of Philip's. So that's a bit complicated, but I hope that's okay. All right. So Philip summons John to go to Paris to answer for his charges. John makes another mistake. Arguably, he refuses to go. Okay. So whilst this is going on, Arthur, the nephew of John, who has also got a claim to the throne, pays homage to Philip. Okay, so now Philip has the excuse to attack John, and he's also in control of an heir, another potential English king, somebody else with a claim to the English throne. So that arms him with all the ammunition he needs to attack the Angevin Empire. Okay, so Philip then declares that John's lands in the Angevin Empire be handed over to Arthur, and that Normandy be handed over to himself, because Arthur actually has a claim on the English throne. And so if Arthur becomes English king and Philip's in control of him, okay, he effectively controls England, the Angevin Empire, as well as France. So that's the plan he puts into play. And it's John that gives him the excuse by marrying Isabella when she was promised to another one of Philip II's barons. Okay? So that starts a war. It starts a war between Philip II and Arthur, and John on the other side. Okay? John rushes to France with an army to protect his lands. And Arthur, the teenage Arthur, has an army of his own, and he moves, his first sort of play, if you like, is to threaten a castle. I hate pronouncing this. I think it's Mirebeau. Mirebeau. I apologize for my awful French pronunciation there, but anyway, that's what's called Mirebeau, okay, or Mirebeau, I think. Castle there. That's the first one he attacks. Now, here's the thing about Mirebeau, folks. It's that John's mother was there. Eleanor of Aquitaine was at the castle, so Arthur's army directly threatens the safety of Eleanor. And that, of course, understandably, sort of spurs John on, and, you know, he doubles his efforts to save his mother, as you would expect. And his army get to Mirebeau, John's army get to Mirebeau to defend Eleanor far quickly than Arthur's army expects. Arthur's army is taken by surprise, and at the Battle of Mirebeau, Arthur's army is defeated by John. So again, a little bit of evidence there for, John not being that terrible a military commander, because he has a famous victory at the Battle of Mirebeau, and that's in the summer of 1212. Not only does he defeat Arthur's army and save his mother, but he captures Arthur. He captures his treacherous, as he sees it, his treacherous nephew. okay, and he is taken captive. Now, here's the thing with this, folks. Okay, so now John has Arthur captive. He's got his enemy captive, okay, which puts him in a strong position. But as you'll remember when we did the Richard course, when Richard is forced to, allegedly forced to kill 2,600 Muslim prisoners, it is not the done thing to just kill captives in medieval times. You didn't do it, folks, okay? Life meant something in medieval times. You ransomed them back, or you kept them captive, but you did not just mercilessly kill them, okay? And actually, by keeping hold of Arthur, Arthur's allies in Brittany, which is the area he directly controlled in France, is his sort of feudal area, if you like. The people in Brittany called the Bretons, they were famously rebellious towards the Angevin Empire. When John's got Arthur captive, it kind of forces them to stay loyal to John, because if they rebel against John, he could kill their lord, he could kill Arthur. Okay, so he was forcing them to stay loyal. But in 1203, Arthur disappears from history. Nobody knows what happened to him, guys. It's one of history's great mysteries. Okay, there are all kinds of rumors that John drowned Arthur with his bare hands, that he beat him to death in a drunken rage. Some people say one of John's barons, a man by the name of William de Brouse or William de Brioza, was ordered to castrate Arthur, which means cut off his gentleman bits. Okay, whatever happened to him, we know, we're almost certain that he was killed because he disappears. So that changes things immediately. The minute Arthur's dead, the Bretons, people from Brittany, no longer needed to stay loyal, so they give their support to Philip. And also as a result of Arthur's death, you've got to remember that Arthur is John's nephew. It wasn't the done thing to kill people in medieval times, kill hostages anyway. But John's now killed his nephew. And not just a nephew, but a young boy. A lot of John's barons were disgusted by this. Absolutely outraged. And some of them defected or changed sides and went over to Philip. Okay? After John kills Arthur, he returns home in 1203. You know, historians often debate this and say, you know, this is probably unwise because it looks like he's giving up on the lands in France. He was there with an army to defend his lands in France. By 1203, John's decided to go home. You know, that looks bad. That looks weak. That looks like he's turning his back on the Angevin Empire, the lands in France. John returns home to raise more money, to raise a better army, to buy more weaponry, whatever, to go back to make his war more successful. But the country had no money. The countries had no money. At this point, John calls another scutage. Okay, throughout his reign, John calls more scutages than any other king in history. So far more tax. He's taxing his barons heavily. And that's despite the fact of heavy tax during Richard's reign. Okay, and he also, John also appeals to the Pope to arrange a peace treaty between Philip and himself. But of course, Philip has absolutely no interest in this because, firstly, he's justified in attacking John because John is Philip's vassal for the lands in France, and John has misbehaved by marrying Isabel, and he's misbehaved again by just mercilessly killing Arthur. Okay, and secondly, Philip's got no interest in a peace treaty because he's winning. He's winning, folks, all right? John steadily loses land from the Angevin Empire. Philip II steadily, victory after victory, takes more and more of the French lands between 1202 and 1204 until Normandy is the only part left standing. Normandy's in the north, and that, of course, just outside Rouen, which is the Angevin capital, you've also got Chateau Gaillard, which is Richard's famous bastion, his castle, the one he called his daughter, his baby. It was state of the art. It was supposed to be impenetrable. Okay, were not supposed to be able to defeat Chatter Gayard. That was the point of it. But on the 6th of March 1204, Chateau Gaillard falls to Philip. Philip captures it. Okay? It wasn't easy. It had been besieged. That means it was being attacked and surrounded from the summer of 1203. So, you know, best part of a year. Eventually, supplies run out and the castle surrenders. Now, this looks bad as well because it takes so long for Philip to take Chateau Gaillard. You know, the argument could be made that John could have returned. Maybe he could have raised an army. Maybe he could have done something to save the castle. But he doesn't. He doesn't. It's besieged, it's surrounded, it runs out of supplies, and it surrenders on the 6th of March, 1204. And with Chateau Gaillard gone, without Chateau Gaillard, Philip's army overruns Normandy. Rouen falls on June the 24th, 1204. Normandy falls, and John loses all of the lands in Normandy. Still got the English lands, but all of the Angevin lands in France, all gone. Now that has some dire consequences for John. You remember how bad this is. Firstly, barons in England, just like John, have lands in England and France, so all those lands have been lost. Makes him unpopular. Remember, John sees himself as Angevin first and English second. His ancestral homeland, Arnieu, has fallen. Aquitaine, fallen. Normandy, fallen. And it's after this that he gains his nickname, Soft Sword. Soft Sword. It is a dirty joke, folks. It is supposed to be a joke about his manhood. Okay? And you can imagine how embarrassing this was for the barons. You know, old Soft Sword is our king. Yep. And that shows you how they felt about him. And of course, that was due to his inability to defend his own territory. And over the next decade of John's reign, he would spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort trying to win Normandy back. But he never does. So when he becomes king, his empire is virtually the same size as Richard, virtually the same size as Henry II's. And by 1204, 5 years after becoming king, he's lost his ancestral homeland and all of the Angevin lands in France. Makes him deeply, deeply unpopular. I hope you've enjoyed that one, ladies and gentlemen. I got disturbed a couple of times in that, so sorry if it was a bit bitty. Hopefully you didn't notice as I went through that I had to pause that a couple of times. But hopefully that's been useful to you. That's the first of sort of four chunks of John's reign, the loss of Normandy, and of course that has huge ramifications, huge consequences for the rest of his reign. We're going to move on to John's fallout with Pope Innocent III next time, and I hope you join me for that one. Bye-bye then.